We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
What's up, RotoViz listeners? It's Colin Kelly here, executive producer of RotoViz Radio and one of the co-hosts of the RotoViz Overtime podcast. I just wanted to drop by and say thank you, as always, for listening into another RotoViz Radio production. As a loyal podcast listener, you can save yourself 10% off a RotoViz NFL pass right now at rotoviz.com/podcast or by simply adding the code RVRadio2021 at checkout. That'll get you access to all of the content and tools on the RotoViz website, the best tools and content in the business for the best listeners in the business. As always, we do appreciate you listening to each and every show. And if you do have 5, 10, 15 seconds to spare, please drop a rating for today's show on your favorite podcast app. It is much appreciated. With all that said, thank you once again for tuning in. I hope you have a great day. Now let's get back to the show.
Breaks a tackle, watch out! Burst of speed! Look at this freshman!
Welcome to the home of professional football, Canton, Ohio.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the College to Canton podcast, the perfect show for any and every college football and NFL fan. I'm your host, Travis May, and if you're joining us for the first time, College to Canton is a show where we talk about everything from college football recruiting to in-season college and NFL breakdowns to NFL draft coverage to, who's going to be in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. We always talk about some fantasy football stuff because this is a RotoViz radio podcast, but we also make sure to dive into some real college football and NFL analysis too. And if you've been following along, we've been talking about some future NFL stars that are coming back to college, some NFL pro day stuff, some big boards and rookie drafts through three rounds and a whole bunch of fun stuff, some mock drafts. But today I'm joined by a very special guest, Matt Hicks, at the FF_educator on Twitter of the NFL Draft Bible and doing some Devy and Dynasty stuff for Fan Nation. I guess the SI now, Sports Illustrated, what they're doing with Devy and Dynasty content and things like that. But we're going to be diving into some of the risers and fallers in this NFL Pro Day season. You know, I did kind of talk about the metrics that we're going to look for a few weeks ago and what they might mean with Peter Howard, but we actually have some information to talk about now, some names to dive into and talk about how that's affecting their real life NFL draft stock. And so really just want to cover both sides of the ball even today. I know we normally keep it to just offensive players, but going to even dive into a few defensive names too. So if you play in individual defensive player fantasy leagues or you just like talking about players that are going to make it at the next level at all positions, we'll get to some of those names here shortly. But Matt, thank you for joining me.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I love this pod. I love all the RotoViz pods. I was on with Stefan and Matt, I think, last week. So I love it, man. I'm glad to be on here chopping it up.
Yeah, it's always good to talk to you and talk some football. I mean, you and I mean, we nerd out with this stuff when it comes to fantasy football. We dive in, and I mentioned just kind of in passing that you do Devy and Dynasty, and I act like those are normal words that people just throw around all the time, but they're not. Like, Devy, you know, fantasy football, having these players, you know, while they're still in college, you know, 3 or 4 years before they're even in the pros, like, that's a weird fantasy format, but it's a lot of fun, and you and I are both just neck deep in this stuff, and, you know, Matt and Stefan are too, and I think it's been cool. We were just talking about that before the show, to see that grow, and I think it's because everyone loves to talk NFL prospects and get in on NFL draft coverage and get one step ahead of their league mates if they play fantasy football. But it's just fun breaking down these players and looking at the, not just like the finished product, but the totality of a player's career. Like, what made them who they are and how did they get here? And that's really what, I mean, that's what the foundation of this show was when I began. Just the journey of a prospect from the recruiting all the way through college, all the way into the NFL, into the Pro Football Hall of Fame, that entire journey. And so this is my favorite time of year, just talking about these players, looking back at how they got here, and now what are these final pieces of information going to do to their NFL draft stock. So just kicking it off, first name, just had his pro day today. I think right now he sits in the category of the fallers, right? The guys that might see their draft stock take a dip just because of what they looked like at their pro day, which is insane when we're talking about a player in Rondale Moore who just ran a sub 4.3 40-yard dash and leaped through the roof to hit 42.5 at the vertical, even though he was, and here's the kicker, 5'7" as a wide receiver. So I'm Purdue Boilermaker, love the guy, love what he did from a production standpoint to get here. Even though, you know, he was injured finishing his career. But to you, Matt, do you think he can still be a super productive slot unicorn monster receiver?
Well, I think the key word you said there is unicorn, right? I think
yeah.
For in order for Rondale Moore to hit, we're banking on an outlier. And so for me, you know, there's very few prospects I'll ever, you know, write off. I like to think that everybody has a spot in the draft where I'm willing to take them. But I don't know if we're going to see that value slide, right, to the point where it makes sense. I think from an NFL perspective, day one is off the table. I've kind of had that off the table for a little while now. So, you know, is it going to be day two? Well, I think it's going to be day two. Is it early day two? Are we pushing round three? I think there's a lot of factors involved here. And I mean, just at the end of the day, you know, you have to consider what the NFL is willing to put that risk on. Are you the coach that's willing to, you know, put that level of manufactured production that you're probably going to have to put in to get the most out of him? I think he's a really special player, but does he fit what the NFL is looking for? Yes, on probably 5 or 6 team boards, and they'll be fantastic with him. But if he goes to one of these other teams, we could see his talents wasted. So it's a real waiting game for me.
Yeah, and that's such a bummer because his ceiling could be so high if the right team took advantage of his skill set. And Purdue, like, with their nasty, just terrible quarterback situation, even his route distribution and where he was catching the ball was just not normal. So, you know, even if we want to project that, hey, he's got 4.3 wheels, he could actually be a deep threat. It's hard to look at his college body of work and go, oh, yeah, that's definitely what he did, because he didn't necessarily do that in a large sample either. So he's a unicorn in his size and his strength and his speed and his early career breakout, having a 2,200 all-purpose season for Purdue, over 30% receiving yard market share as a freshman, you know, checking every analytical box early on. You know, I thought even leading up to this, okay, just looking at him standing next to just normal humans, like, he's probably not actually 5'9". I've probably mentioned that on a few pods before. But yeah, 5'7 is really, really small. So I understand the apprehension. I'm just still going to be probably not irrational, maybe irrationally, a little higher than consensus still when it comes to Rondale Moore. Because I do think that teams are okay once you get outside that first round, taking a little bit of a risk. Even in the earlier parts of the second round, you see players, especially even on like the defensive side of the ball, that have huge question marks, whether it's competition level or whether it's size or whether it's peak athleticism. Like there are some questionable moves made. Like even, like I think like, you know, the competition level for a guy like Darius Leonard coming out, like it was a really suspect move for the Colts to go, hey, I don't care, that's our guy, we're taking him top 40 overall. And a lot of people were like, what? And, you know, now he's like a top five or six inside linebacker in the league. And so I think that Rondale Moore has that kind of potential, given his physical traits, given his analytical profile, given what we know he can do. But yeah, if you put him in any historical bin of wide receivers and said, oh, yeah, that's super likely to work out, you'd be lying. So it's hard. But I think
I wonder if thinking about his value too, you know, we're talking about College to Canton, we're talking about Devy.
Yeah.
I wonder if his value is holding a little bit because we're attached to that player, right? That we've had on our squad for a few years, or we've been in love with Rondale Moore for what, 3 years? He was 18, right? 18 and change when he broke out as a true freshman. So I feel like we have this strong affinity to him. But to your point, you know, I don't have red flags for him, but you know, you have the yellow flag for me for the height. You have the yellow flag for the injury history. And at some point, you know, where do you draw the line? And
yeah,
I think it's point of value. If you're getting him past the mid second round of you know, whew, rookie drafts this year,
I still think that's
value.
I still think,
you know, day two, you know,
yeah,
mid day two of the NFL draft, that's value, you know? So everybody has their point of value and worth. So,
yep. I'm thinking he's still definitely going to get top. I think he's going to sneak into round two still at this point. Over under though, like if I just had to, you know, say, hey, pick 60 over under for Rondale Moore, what would you say right now?
See, I was thinking top 75 still. I would probably put him, later than pick 60. And I think part of that is the strength of this wide receiver class. I think in some other classes, it might be a little bit more tempting to take him early, but I think there's a variety of day two guys that teams really like. And so I would probably put him outside top 60 right now.
Okay. Well, that's one take. I'm going to have to disagree because I'm a Purdue homer. So sorry. It's my podcast and I'm right. Okay.
So just leave me alone. Here, there's a specific pick that I would really love. Let's see. 62 to Green Bay. I would love 62 to Green Bay. So let's put him right there.
That's a sweet spot. That's
that would be a nice spot for him.
That's confusing enough, capital-wise, that people like, they probably don't move him up too high. That's probably like right at expectations or maybe below for many people. Where they're like, you know, they still have Davante Adams there. He's not going to be a monster target, you know, target share guy. I love that too. I think that would be a great spot for him to just be an underneath weapon. And especially if the Packers just go back to like their ways from like 3 or 4 years ago, just slant, 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 screen, slant. And yeah, that would be awesome. But moving on to another wide receiver who with BMI Twitter, he's dropping. Oh, and I feel like I'm going to talk about Devontae Smith like on every other podcast, just because like every other week there's somebody that is ranting about Devontae Smith and him being too skinny, or and he's not going to succeed for this reason or that reason. But like, what if he's just like really good at football, Matt? Like, what if that's the case?
Well, that is the case. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Here's the thing with Devontae. I feel like I'm the most boring Devontae Smith guy, or, you know, because I've had him as my wide receiver four for a while. I think he's good. There's guys I like more, and I certainly like him more than other guys. I haven't moved him from wide receiver four. I just, like, I think he's a really good player, and I recognize the fact that he's $170. He was never not going to be $170, right?
Right,
like,
we
don't double count that, right? We knew going into his pro day that he wasn't going to be more than $170. So,
we've seen
the technical ability. We've seen the hands. We've seen the athleticism, the speed. I mean, there's no doubting it. So, you know, I still feel very confident for Devonta Smith to be a successful NFL pro wide receiver. What does that translate to fantasy? That's the question that we're going to have to answer. And a lot of that's going to be landing spot. Is he the X? Is he expected to be the wide receiver on a team? Like, I hope he doesn't go to Detroit, like I see a lot of mock drafts sending him to, right? But overall, man, he's a really good player. And I think it's okay to be, you know, to like him and not love him. And that's where I'm at with Devonta Smith.
Okay, same question with him. What's the with BMI Twitter? Like, I don't care how many times they want to complain about the weight. I think the NFL is past that. I think that they are convinced this guy is a difference making asset to acquire early in the first round. But if I set the over under at pick 15, where are you going?
15. Oof. I expect Ja'Marr Chase to come off the board before him. I expect Jaylen Waddle to come off the board before him. And then I think it's probably him next. Three wide receivers in the first 15 picks. I'm going to go below that just because I'm trying to mentally factor in my head teams trading up for those quarterbacks early and what that could look like. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to go below, but, you know, he probably doesn't get out of 20, I wouldn't say.
That's where I am. I think he's going somewhere in the teens. Somebody's going to make a move. They might even trade up for him, especially if they see that Chase and Waddle are gone. We could see somebody kind of like, oh, crap, I've got to go get my guy and go move up for a guy who, in terms of peak production, is a 99th percentile production profile player. Now, he doesn't have the early breakout age, especially if we use the 30% threshold, but his final season dominator was like 47% and his, you know, peak adjusted yards per team pass attempt, again, like 99th percentile, just crazy numbers. So, and even the year before, of course, was still the wide receiver one, sharing the load with Jerry Jeudy, first rounder, Henry Ruggs, first rounder, Jaylen Waddle, first rounder this year. So, man, if you're ever going to make an exception for the teammates around him, taking some market share away from him, analytically speaking, I think it's going to be with Devonta Smith. So I think we can beat that into the ground 1,000 times. But for me, I think he was like my wide receiver two for a long time. And I'm not sure he's going to ever drop below wide receiver four for me, no matter what happens in this class. So I still think he should not be falling despite him not participating in drills like he shouldn't do. He has nothing left to prove. Anything that he does is probably just going to hurt him at this point. He might be a quote-unquote faller to some, but I will gladly take the discount if people want to look at him being a buck 70 and double count, like you said, and knock him down their board. But moving on to the defensive side of the ball just for a second here, there's going to be some interesting opportunities to maybe make some smart bets on who would be the first defensive back to go off the board this year, because I loved Caleb Farley for a long time. I think even in the drafts that we did with Matt McCoy last fall, I was saying, man, Caleb Farley is the dude. Like, he had the best QBR against in all of college football in 2019, and he's going to be the guy. But then, of course, he had to go and I don't know if he injured something in preparation or what happened in terms of timing. I don't know why he hasn't had this back surgery yet, but he's having minor back surgery like now. So that's probably going to at least knock him down a little bit down the board. And so Patrick Surtain, the second, actually just had his pro day today with Alabama, and he wowed. I mean, he had like a 4.46 at, you know, over 200 pounds in shape, as most players do for Alabama at their pro days. And, you know, everybody's oohing and aahing. And it seems to me like Surtain is going to be the obvious corner one in this class. Is there any chance that's not the case?
Yeah, I mean, I like J.C. Horn as well, but I think that from an NFL perspective, it's probably going to be Patrick Surtain at the top of the board. It's really disappointing with Caleb Farley. I think it's going to be an interesting case study, taking myself out of it a little bit. Not only do you have the injury, but you also have like this opt-out situation. Mm-hmm. And how do those things compound? Like, how far will this guy fall? Does he fall to day two?
Who knows? That'd be a mistake. Wow,
it would be a mistake. But like, we've seen these crazy values, right? We go back and we see these. So like, you know, it could be a real steal for some of these teams at the top of day two if he falls that far. It's just going to be fascinating for me to watch that play out on draft night. But you have to think Surtain's going to be the top guy off the board. And then I would probably peg Horn to be next off the board, but I don't consider myself to be a defensive specialist.
Yeah, I don't necessarily say that I'm the expert when it comes to that. But, man, I do value the analytics when you dig into pass coverage numbers, and especially like if you split it up into what a player is specifically good at. Like Surtain, like he's not, in terms of his coverage numbers, like top five or even top 10 in like any one metric. But what he does is everything well. Like he could play in multiple corner positions and honestly be a safety if he wanted to. Like he could do a whole lot, and that's where he's going to be valuable. But like if you want Caleb Farley to be put out on an island and shut down an entire half of the field by himself, he can do that. If you want J.C. Horn to just get on the guy's number one and press the heck out of him for an entire game, that's going to be the formula. Like, so those three guys, I think they bring something unique to their game that makes them worth snagging early. But one more guy who we'll get to in a bit, actually might as well talk about him now since we're talking corners, before we lose all of our people that don't care about defensive side of the ball. But with like, I think Trey Brown out of Oklahoma, I don't know if you've dug into him at all, but in terms of out wide, like on an island type coverage and pass, like QBR against, like all his advanced metrics, Trey Brown out of Oklahoma, defensive back, he checks like most every box, like especially at outside corner. Like he had over 30 targets last year and allowed barely double digit completions. Like he had like almost like not crazy, I'm like single digit quarterback rating against on out wide coverage like Caleb Farley did, but he like a lot of QBR of like 20 or something like that. Crazy. Like, so it was number one in the country in terms of outside corner coverage numbers. And yet he's not being talked about at all in terms of like first round buzz. And so I think he's going to be a mid round steal for many, but have you checked him out very much at all?
I'm not deep enough on that side of the ball, but those are good numbers, man. From the defensive back perspective. And, you know, to your earlier point as well, wrapping in those two thoughts, versatility, man, when it comes to being a defensive back in the NFL, the more you could do, the earlier you're going to go, because schemes are just so fluid right now. And, you know, depth is the name of the game. So the more versatile you are, it's going to sell you well.
Yeah, absolutely. Multiplicity in today's NFL is key. Have there been any on the, going back to the offensive side of the ball, we kick things off with wide receiver, at running back. Have there been some performances thus far that have really disappointed you in terms of what you thought might happen at their pro day?
I mean, it's difficult for me. I try not to over evaluate the pro day too much, but like these size weigh-ins I think are so important this year, because I think that's what we're really missing out on from the combine. And
yeah,
man, I was a big Jared Patterson fan, and originally I saw his numbers come in and I was like, the testing numbers don't look bad. And then I saw him come in at 5'6", and I was like, man, that's tough, because I think he's a strong back. He's got a good low center of gravity, and you know, for me, I still want to think that he can be a productive guy in the NFL, but that's small, man. That's really small to have a long, you know, a long period of production in the NFL.
Yeah. Jared Patterson, of course, the Buffalo running back. I think a lot of people liked him as like a day three sleeper because, you know, he had that, what, the eight, was it eight touchdowns or something crazy?
Eight
like
touchdowns.
400
yards.
It was the Kent State game. I was watching that live and I was just like, I was rooting for it so hard. Like even the announcers, like they were just like so mad when the when the coaches benched Jarrett Patterson, like one touchdown away from like in a few yards away from like all-time record, just everywhere.
I was watching his 2019 tape. I loved it. Like,
yeah.
Like I was,
oh, yeah,
into
it's more
it,
than,
man. He's,
yeah,
I mean, he's lighting guys up, and I know it's the Mac, but still, like he wasn't beating guys, like he was running over linebackers. So he's strong, but there's limitations to how your body's going to hold up at the next level.
Absolutely. So I think there's questions there, and when you mix in the fact that he's not exactly a pass catching back at all, that's not the best combination when you're talking about a 5'6" group of five conference running back. I know some people liked Rakeem Boyd out of Arkansas after the 2019 season, where he put up over 1,000 yards and had a pretty good yards per touch clip against mainly all SEC production in 2019. And then really disappointed, struggled to stay healthy, was usurped by Traylon Smith for Arkansas this year, and really, really just did not look like the same player. I had questions about how he was going to look at his pro day, and man, he really disappointed. Like ran like around a 4.6 in the 40 at 2:13, so not really good in terms of size speed. Then had like a bottom 10 percentile vertical jump, bottom like 0 percentile broad jump, And agility scores, again, bottom 10%. Even when you adjust for size, it's just not great. So he really needed to do something to prove that he had NFL athleticism. And he's already like a really old prospect too. There's just a whole lot of nope in his profile at this point. So lots of questions there. So he's kind of been falling for me. I saw some reaction initially with Ramondre Stevenson just because he ran like a 4.63 and people freak out about 40 times, you know, trying to make him kind of a faller in his stock. But when you take into consideration that he's like 230 pounds, again, Ramondre Stevenson out of Oklahoma, running back, 230-pound guy running 4.63, like that's still around a 100 speed score, which is, you know, near the threshold that you want to see. So Ramondre Stevenson is still a guy I actually like. You know, he finished strong, had over 800 yards from scrimmage in his final season. Are you high on Stevenson?
He was somebody that I was pretty low on to start. I think he's around my running back 12 right now. So, I mean, I certainly wasn't surprised by the pro day numbers. But again, it's like, let's not double count. You know what I mean? Like you, if you watch Ramondre Stevenson tape, you weren't getting excited for the 40 time. No. And I don't think there's going to be many points in his NFL career where he'll run 40 yards at a time. You know what I mean? Like he's going to be a guy that smashes in between the tackles and is kind of used, I think, in a little bit more of a niche role. And hopefully that includes red zone touches, right? That's kind of where the value might come from. He has the size,
that's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, that's what makes him funny. It's not his ability to burst through a gap. You know, that's not necessarily what we're looking for, or definitely not downfield acceleration. So, you know, it's kind of about really taking into context the guys themselves and what you expect them to be good at. And, you know, one of the things that we were talking about, Rakeem Boyd, he put up 6 on the bench. I'm like, man, like you kind of looked strong on tape. So like, you know, you want to look at what you're specifically looking for as strengths, and you're hoping that's confirmed. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right. Exactly. So, try not to double count. That's the thing. It's like, if I already know the guy's fast and then he runs fast, I shouldn't move him up my board. If I already know he's really strong, or I already know he's really big, it's like, oh my gosh, he's really big. Like, I shouldn't be surprised when exactly what I'm expecting to happen happens. And so that's not really what I'm trying to get at tonight either. It's just like, I was surprised, going back to the wide receiver well for a sec, Isaiah McCoy, another small school wide receiver out of Kent State, the team that Jarrett Patterson put like 400 yards on. Isaiah McCoy's, Isaiah McCoy, he was, I mean, like pretty much a deep threat for Kent State and, you know, their weird scheme that, you know, loves to utilize a ton of play action, a lot of runs, and Dustin Crum's pretty good. I thought he was much faster than a 4.58 in the 40. Like I wanted to see, you know, he is a group of five guy, so maybe he didn't have, you know, that perfect pedigree and athleticism, but I wanted to see something out of a guy that looked like a deep threat in college. So maybe it was more technique and maybe just setting people up and stacking in lower level competition that allowed him to get open. But his adjusted profile in terms of like breaking out and the year by year that he did it, his progression to his production profile was really solid. And his overall adjusted production index, which is a fun metric I put together for RotoViz, is like 88th percentile. Minimum threshold of a hit is typically 60th percentile. In terms of even projecting capital, it's a pretty safe range that he's in. But didn't do himself any favors at his pro day. Do you have thoughts on Isaiah McCoy?
Yeah, I think he's interesting. For me, he swallowed up a little bit in some of these other guys that are going to go in that same range as him. Like there's a wide range of good wide receivers that'll go on day three. So he doesn't stick out at the top of that group. But when you're thinking about, you know, a Kent State wide receiver, he's not training in the same way that I think a lot of these guys have access to this elite level training. And are going to Exos Pro Days. And you know what I mean? So I think a big part of running the 40 is actually the technique that you're trained in how to run.
Absolutely.
So I try not to knock these group of five guys too much. And I will rely a little bit more on the play speed that I see with them on tape. So I think there's a place for Isaiah McCoy in the NFL, but he is somebody for me who might get pushed to UDFA territory or, you know, preferred UDFA territory just because I think there's going to be, you know, 10 to 12 wide receivers that could realistically go just day three. It's such a deep class. I mean, you're looking at guys like Amari Rodgers could fall to day three, and I think he's super talented. So it should be a really interesting situation to see play out. But if you are on McCoy or any of these other wide receivers, don't pivot. For me anyways, I'm not going to pivot automatically if they do go preferred UDFA.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Of course, I'm going to be a little bit more nervous, but I'm going to track them through the summer and see how they do on making that squad.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the kind of depth and breadth that we typically play in. I know some of our listeners might not, but these are names to keep in mind that you might get excited about your real NFL team grabbing, or you might snag in the last round of a rookie draft coming up this summer. But before we talk about some of the rising names, not just all the guys that are kind of falling down our boards, just a word from our sponsors.
Look, no one's perfect. Even the best baseball players strike out with the bases loaded. The best golfers sometimes three-putt with the tournament on the line. So if you feel like you come up short in the bedroom sometimes, it's perfectly okay. But if it's bothering you, there are options. Go to GetRoman.com/RotoViz now. With Roman, you get a free online evaluation and ongoing care for ED, all from the comfort and privacy of your home. A U.S.-licensed healthcare professional will work with you to find the best treatment plan. If medication's appropriate, it ships to you free with two-day shipping. The whole process is straightforward and discreet. Getting started is simple. Just go to GetRoman.com/RotoViz and complete an online visit. Take care of your ED without leaving home. Complete an online visit today to connect with a doctor and take care of it. Go to GetRoman.com/RotoViz now to get $15 off your first month. Look, there's a straightforward way to take care of your ED. GetRoman.com/RotoViz. Get started now to save $15 on your first month of treatment.
And we're back. So we've talked about some of the guys that were falling down the boards that disappointed, whether it be their size or their weight or their 40 time or whatever else that, you know, might not have exactly met the expectations we had for them at their pro days. And that might have an effect on their draft capital in a negative way. Maybe it's health issues. Talked about some of those guys. I want to talk about some positive things. Let's get to some names that have been rising that we're excited about drafting no matter what. Although I still am a Rondale Moore fanboy, no matter what, even if he was 4'8". But let's talk about Kyle Pitts, tight end, Florida. God's gift to the tight end position / wide receiver position / any position, because he's the best football player ever, according to everyone. Kyle Pitts, what are your thoughts on him running a 4.46 40?
Checks out, man. It's a good wide receiver 40 time, right? So
yeah.
yeah. But I think you can tell, right? Like he's a fast guy. We knew that. He's athletic. So I expected him to go to his pro day and test really well. And I think this is seriously a guy. And I'm not saying it's the majority of team boards, but I really think he's a wide receiver, probably on 4 or 5 NFL boards right now. Chances are he's going to get drafted to be a tight end in the NFL, and things will kind of play out like normal, and you know, there won't be chaos. But part of me would love just to see the chaos, the fantasy football reactions if he goes as a wide receiver. He gets his name called on draft night.
Yeah, that would be a lot of fun. I think there were some of us last year that even joked about Chase Claypool just being a tight end. And then, you know, of course, he stayed as a wide receiver. But I do really think Claypool could have killed it in either way. And like, however he was deployed, he would have found success. That's how kind of how I feel about Kyle Pitts, except I'm way more confident in it than I am with Chase Claypool doing, you know, basically taking till his final season to do much of anything more impressive than one of his other teammates. But Kyle Pitts, man, I mean, he had just about the makings of a breakout a year before, and his tape's just as impressive. So he was as fast, as rangy, as ridiculous at contested catches. He just had more volume because Florida finally decided to kind of change how they run things. Mullen normally goes, he normally doesn't like the statue quarterbacks, but he went with Trask and leaned further into Trask's downfield passing ability and just said, hey, we got Kyle Pitts, so throw it to that guy. And that guy over there in the corner who's doing backflips in the middle of his routes for some reason, give him the ball too, Kadarius Toney. And they just distributed the ball, and Kyle Pitts was the wide receiver one, really. He was playing X wide receiver. He was playing slot wide receiver. He was playing in line tight end. And he can block better than I think a lot of people give him credit for. So I don't care necessarily that he ran a 4.46 40. I already knew that he was like around a 4.5 probably. He wasn't going to be a 4.3 or 4.4 guy like Calvin Johnson or even Chase Claypool from a year ago. But I think he is way up at the top of everyone's board. I mean, you're already seeing the people gush about him being like the first or second best player on period in this draft. And I think that's the kind of player he is. I still like the other two tight ends. I still like Pat Freiermuth. I still like Brevin Jordan. But entering this past season, there was a tier of three tight ends, and now there is basically Kyle Pitts on the moon by himself, and there's no one else. So it's nice to see the confirmation. Didn't move him up my board at all. I still wouldn't take him in the first half of the first round in just about any format for fantasy football. Where are you with that? Like, where would you take him for fantasy football purposes, for dynasty draft purposes, in both, I guess, super flex or two QB and one quarterback drafts?
Yeah, so in super flex leagues, he's currently 11 right now on my board. So back half of the first round, I think, is where I feel very comfortable with him. Obviously, if there's a tight end premium and he ends up being labeled as a tight end, that's a big perk. Maybe you could start considering him in that 105, 106 range. In a one quarterback league, adjusting my board a little bit, we'd probably move him up about three slots, which would move him up to like 108 in a one quarterback.
Wow. Yeah. That's about the same spot I think I am at this point. I can't put him up in the top half just because I'm way too high on the three running backs in this class that I believe can be difference makers, and a handful of wide receivers that I believe can be difference makers. It's really tough if he does stay a tight end. If a team's just like, hey, he's a wide receiver, and we're going to use him wherever the heck we want to, that'll be a lot of fun. It would really mess with his positional like designation on all the websites where we play. It will be interesting to see if he gets any multiplicity there, because that might change my answer too. Like, if it's like, hey, you can start him at tight end or wide receiver, like that would be interesting if a team actually finally went with it and just said, hey, we're gonna just say either or. That would be kind of a game changer, I think, for Kyle Pitts. But
yeah, if you look at it, like, we were really excited about TJ Hawkinson and Noah Fant. And I think that Kyle Pitts is obviously more athletic than those two guys, but those two guys both went, what, top 19? Where did Fant go? Like 18, 19, something like that. They were, and Hawk was a top 10 pick, but it's still taken us.
Yeah, they both were. It was crazy. Yeah. It was like way up there.
Yeah, it's gonna take us like 3 years to get fantasy football production out of them. So yeah, I think I think you have to be willing to wait at least a year for any tight end to translate, no matter whether they're really a tight end or whether they're, kind of this hybrid mold. You're still going to have a waiting period. It's a tough position.
I don't think people understand, like, especially when, because you have to be able to block like you're a fullback, but also like you're an offensive tackle in pass and run block situations. And also you have to play slot wide receiver, and also you have to play X wide receiver. And that's like in the modern usage of NFL tight ends, it's, you have to know every single position except for offensive guard and center, to play that position. So it is a bizarre learning curve that I don't think people really appreciate. And even in most leagues, it's just the trade value for fantasy football for tight ends is just not there, unless you actually do become like the next Travis Kelce. But anyway, moving on to another.
We have three good tight ends. I want to get rid of one of them.
Yeah. But moving on to another running back, though, back to that well, because Kenneth Gainwell, I think I may have even, I don't know if we exchanged pleasantries at all about Kenneth Gainwell and his pro day, But, you know, he checked in at 201 pounds last week. I think a lot of people had questions on his size. You know, Memphis might have listed him around 190 or so, but that was really friendly. Like, he was not bad. And so he used this time off, the year off, and he missed the year for sad, sad family personal reasons. But to run a 4.42, to drop 21 reps on the bench, and to break 201 pounds, and to have put a 2,000 yards from scrimmage season on your resume, like he did, man, it's like, what is not to like with Kenny Gainwell for you?
So with Kenny Gainwell, I think, you know, this is a great example of when players opted out of the season, and they all have their own reasons, right? And that's totally fine. And anyone who opted out, that's your choice. You know, you got to do what's best for you. But you could tell that he spent the year training for this, right?
Absolutely.
Because he knew that this was his opportunity to make up for not putting that extra tape out. And he did. He came in at the weight we wanted to see. I mean, 21 reps on the bench. We just talked about Rakeem Boyd, who's supposed to be this power guy, put up 6 reps on the bench.
Yeah.
And Kenny Gainwell, who is really, I mean, his playing weight's going to be a buck 90, right? Like, he's going to drop from this. He's going to play in the NFL in the probably low to mid 190s, but he's still strong. And that's not what he's known for, right? He's known for being athletic, quick, a 4.42. So for me, I mean, Gainwell was my 5. He's going to hold at my 5. He will probably move to my 4 because I'm keeping somebody in my running back ranks that I love, but is probably going to, I already know his draft capital is not going to be able to hold. But I love him as a player. So I think Gainwell is probably realistically going to end up as my 4, which I think is probably the best case scenario for him once he opted out of this past season, right? And, well, once we realized who Javonte Williams was and he presented himself. So I think if you're a Kenny Gainwell truther, you have to be pretty happy with where his value is moving to.
Yeah, for me, it just feels like he's not going to be a feature. I don't believe that. But at the same time, it's like if and no, I'm not preface this by saying he's not the next Christian McCaffrey. But if you look at McCaffrey and what he did, he was like right at 200 pounds. He ran a 4.48 and he had 10 on the bench press. By the way, bench press has literally no statistically sticky or meaningful implications. I'm just comparing the what they did. And they did a lot of the same in terms of their pre-draft process and where they weighed in. And so it's a really not Kenneth Gainwell for his size at this point. It just seems a little lazy other than to say he's probably not going to be a 25 touch type guy. But I really hope he gets in a situation that allows him to take the ball outside, just get him in space, because he can just do amazing things when he finds that crease. So I think he is that running back 4 in a class that's pretty shallow, has a clear top 3, and after that, there's a lot of question marks, but
it's definitely wide open, man. After that first tier, whether you consider those first 3 running backs 1 or 2 tiers, after you get past those first 3 guys, like, take your home run swing, pick which one you want, because that's what you're shooting for. And Gainwell is showing that he at least is worth the swing, right? He's worth going for.
Absolutely. Well, back to the defensive side of the ball real quick here, just because I was really intrigued by a few of the guys that have been coming out doing crazy stuff. Like, For Pitt, Jalen Twyman putting up like 40-something bench reps, which, by the way, would have been like an NFL record. And, I mean, he was just – everyone knew he took the year off for Pitt. Like, Pitt had a really good defensive line, really good edge rushers in Rashad Weaver and Patrick Jones the second. Like, they were really stacked on their defensive front. Jalen Twyman, obviously one of the opt-out guys, but, man, I think that's going to be a big mistake if teams look at him and are not taking him. I remember seeing some draft boards last year, and he was already, you know, projected to be like a first-round pick, early second-round pick, but now he's like a mid-round guy, and people just don't understand how strong he is. And so I was really wowed by his strength and his ability to he didn't waste time either. He prepared, and he was ready to go, putting up 40 reps on the bench. It's just absurd at 225 pounds. Are you a fan of any of the Pittsburgh defensive line or edge guys?
Yeah, it's such an interesting edge class where I feel like the last couple seasons we've had this clear group at the top, and we don't have that this year. So, but what we do have is a lot of these guys that I think kind of fall in a very similar vein as what we're talking about here with Twyman, of like athletic, kind of freaky upside guys. And I think that's going to lead to some really good value, like back end of day one, early day two, because it's going to take a little bit of risk, right? And some of these guys are going to miss, but I think we're going to end up with some really high upside guys.
Same here.
Whether it's Twyman or, you know what I mean? Like there's,
Barmore.
It's going to be fun.
Yeah. Like Barmore, man, like, he didn't do much before this past season, but that's just kind of how the Alabama defensive line works in many cases, unless you're, you know, like, or edge rushers, unless you're Will Anderson, who's like their freshman this year and led the team in sacks and pressures, led the nation in pressures, I believe overall. So just kind of a crazy, freaky freshman. He's going to be the first overall pick, by the way, or maybe second in 2023. But Christian Barmore, running like a 4.940 at 310 pounds, the dude. And really just showing some bend, even. I was watching some of the pro day. Like, 310-pound people shouldn't be able to bend and move like Christian Barmore can. So I think he's going to be a lot of fun. But the guy that came out of nowhere for me, I do the top 100 rookie series, and I've been doing that for 5 years now, looking at the best top 100 fantasy football guys on both offense and defense. Milton Williams, Louisiana Tech defensive line, and I will forgive you if you haven't dug through his tape, because finding Louisiana Tech tape is not an easy feat. But the guy is like 6'3", almost 290 pounds, and ran like a 4.640. He had which computes, by the way, to like a speed score like that's, you know, top, like it's like first percentile speed score for any position. Like 120 plus speed score at 284 pounds, running almost a 4.640. Like, he was a tenth faster, not a tenth faster. He was a 100th faster than Ramondre Stevenson, who weighs almost 60 pounds less than he does. And not to mention that he had a 38.5-inch vertical at almost 300 pounds, a broad jump over 10 feet. And then his agility drills, you know what the average time for like a three cone for a wide receiver is? It's around 7 seconds. It's like maybe 6.96 seconds. He in his three cone drill, he put a 6.93 up. Like, inhumane. Like, this guy, he's just breaking the laws of physics at this pro day. They're either just making up everything as they go, just scribbling like, it's 33. I'm just going to round up and say 38. It's like, how in the world is this even physically possible? Do you even, like, I had heard of the name Milton Williams. I had not watched more than like a game and a half at all on this guy. Like, have you really dug into him at all?
I haven't, man. When I watched Louisiana Tech, I just watched like plotter running backs primarily.
yeah, same. I overrate them, like Kenneth Dixon back in the day. But no, it's funny. It's just, there's always that one guy that just goes off like that. I'm underselling it, I promise. Like, the feats that he did at his pro day should not be physically possible. And so he's definitely
going to get him
drafted,
man. It's going to get him drafted in a good spot.
It's going to get him day two capital. Like, I think.
Absolutely.
It's just, it's insane. So it's crazy. I love to see that. I love to see guys blow up like that. That are G5, smaller school guys that, you know, they don't have the perfect production profile. Maybe they don't have the perfect story, but they just wow, and somebody takes a risk. And so I hope it really pans out for them. And down the stretch, let's just go down through like four or five other wide receivers, though. Actually, before we do that, Mac Jones, dude, ran like a sub 4.740 at his pro day. And I was like, I thought he was Peyton Manning, you know, maybe not that, not quite that unathletic, maybe like Eli, you know, but, you know, but running a sub 4.7, that's going to get somebody's attention. He was already, you know, creeping up into the top 10 overall picks conversation, you know, having like a 95th percentile analytical profile in his peak season here for Alabama, putting 500-yard passing games on his resume, and winning the national championship, whatever. He was going to be a high draft pick. But for you, is there any chance for you he creeps into the top four quarterbacks?
I don't think he creeps into the top four quarterbacks. I think the other ones present so much more upside from an NFL perspective. But what I will say is that I think there's a good shot we see a set of trade-ups, right, where we could see the first four quarterbacks go off the board in the first four picks, honestly. because just recent trends in NFL drafts. So what could happen is Mac Jones could end up being a top 10 selection, but the fifth quarterback off the board, if we just keep seeing these trade ups and kind of domino effect, that's going to be the real storyline of the draft. You know, and obviously the Jets having a big play in that, and Atlanta, if Atlanta moves back and Carolina moving up. So there's so many factors, but you know, if those first guys come off the board, does Washington get anxious? Do they jump up to a top 10 spot? New England, did they get anxious and move up to a top 10 spot? So I think that's the best chance for Mac Jones to be a top 10 quarterback.
Yeah, well, obviously.
Or top 10 overall selection.
Obviously, the Washington football team's not going to do that because they have Ryan Fitzpatrick. They don't need...
It's my perfect spot for Mac Jones, man. Like, let him be behind a good offensive line. Let the defense do the work. Does this sound kind of familiar with what's been going on?
Yeah.
It's a recipe for success.
Yeah, and Ryan Fitzpatrick can again be usurped by a young gun and then like mid-season go play for his 32nd NFL team. That would be a lot of fun. But
I'd like to see those two go off in a 40 against each other. I don't know. Fitzmagic might still get him.
He might. He's got more boogie in his step than I think people give him credit for. And in his like 500-year-old frame and his 500-foot-long beard. But anyway, moving on to non-Ryan Fitzpatrick things. Wide receivers, just around the show out here because that's what everyone cares about anyway. Talking about these defenders and Ryan Fitzpatrick's beard. Shut up, Travis. Anyway, so the Auburn Pro Day, Anthony Schwartz, you know, he's an Olympic sprinter. And it's funny, but like his 4.26 40, I was like, man, that was bad. I was like, I saw that. I was like, dang, he must have tripped or something. Because like that's how fast Anthony Schwartz is. Like, and so I don't care. Like, I'm not going to discount him because he ran a 4.26 instead of a 4.19. But Anthony Schwartz, man, he doesn't have a perfect analytical productive profile because Bo Nix is trash and Gus Malzahn got fired, and it's because the offense completely wasted an Olympic sprinter and another guy who's got huge hands and a crazy frame in Seth Williams. But was there anything that stood out with Anthony Schwartz? Like, are you high on him? Do you think he's going to get capital just based off his crazy speed?
Yeah, I've kind of been out there for a little while saying that I just thought Anthony Schwartz was always going to get taken before Seth Williams just because speed sells in the NFL. We know that. That's a fact. Why did Henry Ruggs go above Jerry Jeudy and CeeDee Lamb last year, right? Like, Mecole Hardman made it into the second round a couple years back. So I think Schwartz goes day two at this point, late day two. You know, I'm thinking round three. And then I'm thinking, and I know it's a little bit of a controversial statement, but Seth Williams is a day three guy for me, especially in this class. And I think that's probably going to hold true. You know, probably round four, round five is kind of where I see Seth Williams going. So that's kind of how those two track. But yeah, Anthony Schwartz, man, we knew he was fast. Can he run routes? That's kind of what I wasn't sure that he could do from Auburn.
Yeah, since 2015, there have been 23 wide receivers to run sub-4.4 to 40-yard dash times, and 22 of those 23 were drafted, 17 of which were drafted inside the first three rounds. So I think given the SEC pedigree, there's a chance, and the Olympic speed, that we see Schwartz sneak into day two, and Seth Williams barely misses the day two cutoff, but is still the Gabriel Davis of this particular class. I think he could surprise, be an early fourth round pick and be somebody that plays a very specific role for a team and is still pretty productive and outperforms some of the guys taken ahead of him in this class. And he did kind of check some boxes at the pro day. He did have a 4.45 40 yard dash. He had a pretty impressive burst score when you look at his 37 inch vertical, 10.4 broad, not crazy out the roof numbers, but above average marks there as well. So I do like Seth Williams, but I think there's a good chance that he or Anthony Schwartz missed the ever vital day two cutoff. And then just a few, just a couple kind of flyer names here to put in your back pocket. Josh, I always stumble over his name. Josh, and I've like followed him since high school, and I still can't get it. It says Josh Imaturbebe. I'm just going to leave it there. But Illinois wide receiver, 6'1", 223 pounds, 4'4", 840, 46 and a half inch vertical jump, and an 11'2" broad jump. By the way, that is a better burst score than DK Metcalf, and it is not close. like it's that guy, even in high school, they measure it differently, right? They, at most of the camps for high school prospects and recruits, they like have these kids jump up, lock their knees, and they've got like this mark behind them to take pictures of how far they jumped up. So it's a different measuring method. It's generally inflated just a bit in how they measure, and it's not perfect. But even then, he had an over 46-inch vert, so it was no surprise that he just jumped through the roof in both of his jumps, and he was very athletic. And Illinois is awful at football collectively, but he was the only thing they had going for them, and he actually has a decent production profile if you look at his peak season in 2019, where he accounted for essentially like half of the receiving offense that season. Not very efficient, but still just a name to keep in mind. He didn't even get a combine invite, which I thought was interesting, which is not a good sign for Capital, but I thought it was interesting. Have you ever watched some of Josh Imaturbebe at all?
Yeah, so mostly just catching a little bit of live action, yeah, from him. Same. And yeah, the no combine invite, that's a little scary. The only saving grace is that the combine invites, I believe, were a little scarcer this year because it was really a medical combine situation. And I think they dropped those numbers down a little bit in terms of volume, but I think we're looking at a preferred UDFA status for him. But maybe one of these NFL teams is sold on this athletic upside, because you're right, he's never really had the opportunity to succeed. So maybe he slides into round 7, round 6, possibly.
Yeah. Well, that would be awesome for him. I think he's a day 3 at the earliest, but he's somebody I'm going to probably sneak in and try to add just because of his decent adjusted production metrics. And this season, it was a dumpster fire at the position. They were playing basically a guy who might as well just be a running back, and Isaiah Williams. And so it was kind of a gross situation. Miracle that he did anything at all. But another last name that we'll probably forget come September, Jalen Camp, wide receiver of Georgia Tech, a name that a lot of people had not been talking about. I do the DFS column for RotoViz for college every single week throughout the year, where I throw together a model that looks at basically the top 1,000 players on the main slate every weekend. So I saw Jalen Camp's name over and over and over, because for some reason they kept putting Georgia Tech on the main slate for college football DFS. But I did not think he was going to be 6'2", 226 pounds, and run a 4.43 second 40, and they have a 40-inch vertical jump. Just check. Physically, he looks like a monster, almost just as ridiculous as Josh Imablabla that we just talked about from Illinois. So Jalen Camp, is that, frankly, I mean, have you watched him play at all?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what it was with the TV schedule this year. I swear I caught like 6 Georgia Tech games.
Dude,
like,
seriously? All the time.
They were playing like a lot of primetime Fridays, I think, or something weird. But the Georgia Tech, like, they were a fun offense to watch this year. And obviously, he's not going to be featured. You know, he came in the triple option era, and then they've progressed out of that the last couple of years. Yeah. So he's never really probably fit, and, you know, his production certainly suggests that. But the physicality, I think, is good. The athleticism's there. The speed is there. So he's a fun guy to watch. Again, probably a preferred UDFA. But I think it's important to point out that, you know, a lot of us are playing in 30, 35-man dynasty leagues, yeah, taxi squads. Like, keep these guys on your radar. Stash them, especially at the wide receiver position. These guys do come around and be relevant again, especially when they're finally put in a position to succeed in terms of production. So I like Jalen Camp. He's fun. He always popped out. Despite the fact that he wasn't, you know, putting up 4 touchdowns a game or anything like that, you know, he always popped on it when watching him live.
Absolutely. So, I mean, he
did. Jeff Sims couldn't place a ball for his life.
No, he struggled. He was a freshman. So Jalen Camp putting up with 2 years of option play, 1 year of a transition from option to normal offense, and then finally a true freshman quarterback. So not exactly a normal or ideal situation for a wide receiver. So I think he's actually going to stick on a roster. But just a name to know there. One more name that I won't even ask you to comment on here unless you really care about Tony Fields. But Tony Fields, the second West Virginia linebacker, is my favorite late round linebacker other than Coin Dang, just because of his ridiculously awesome name. But Tony Fields, West Virginia linebacker, tested like a wide receiver at 6 foot two, or sorry, 6 foot, 222 pounds, ran a 4.5 as a linebacker. He covers, extremely productive, was at Arizona first, finished up at West Virginia, highly productive, over 100 tackles, even I think in his first season in college, almost 400 tackles in total, I think, in his whole career. Really productive, perfect for the modern NFL. Keep that name in your hat as well. Tony Fields, second. Tony Fields, the second West Virginia linebacker. But that's all the time we have on the show here. Matt, thanks for joining me. Just talking about some NFL guys, both sides of the ball. Some pro day results and what that might mean for capital, talking some over-unders and everything. Anything you want to pitch here before we kind of close things up?
Yeah, man, I appreciate you having me on here. You know, primarily I feel like communicate via mock drafts because I swear we're always mock drafting together. So it's good to get on here and talk to you. You know, it's the busy season, man. It's the best time of the year. NFL Draft Bible, you know, we're doing Devi and Dynasty content. That's year-round, si.com/NFL/draft, NFL Draft Bible podcast, Rookie Big Board podcast, and then, you know, all my Dynasty Devi rankings and all that kind of good stuff is patreon.com/TheFFEducator. So I think I covered all my projects here.
Nice. Well, hey, glad to, like you said, just glad to talk in a way that's not just mock drafting and Devi drafts and all this other nerdy stuff. Just to talk
you always snipe me. I swear you always
welcome.
Get my picks.
So. You're welcome, man. We actually are in a draft
right
now.
It's good validation.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, we're actually in a draft, I think, right next to each other right now as we speak. It's probably one of us is probably on the clock and we're making everybody wait. But anyway, since we are, I'll wrap up the show there. But listeners, thank you so much for joining us for the 37th episode of the College They Can't podcast. This has been a blast just putting this together, having a lot of fun, talking some prospects. This is, like Matt said, just the best time of the year. We'll be talking about some more NFL draft stuff, some more future NFL studs and returning college football players, as well as some true freshmen entering college here very soon. I can't believe it's like a month away from the NFL draft, but man, just want to say I look forward to many more episodes of you guys joining me soon on this College to Canton podcast.